Kitty. I'm an alcoholic. And I celebrated 6 years on the 12th. Thank you to my friends and my sponsor and my higher power. Tonight I picked my friend Mike to talk because he is so funny and he got sober young and he's still active. You know, and like I can only hope to be like that when I have whatever 10 or 11 years that Mike has. And he brought all his friends and was so happy that he could come. So here's Honda Mike.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 19th, 1998, so I have 11 years. And my home group is a world-famous Monday night speakers group in the sobriety capital world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Yeah! All right. So I'll do the math for you. 11 years. I got sober. I was 28. I just turned 40. I've been with my wife for 9 years. So that in itself impresses the hell out of me. I don't know about you. And like Kitty said, all my friends are here, and that I attribute to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And Lonnie's back there. Let's hear it for Lonnie. Lonnie's a good friend of mine. But you know, I didn't choose Alcoholics Anonymous. It chose me. You know, if I would have had another option, believe me, you'd have a different speaker. You know, I didn't want to get sober as bad as I wanted to keep drinking, but I wanted to get the hell out of jail. And that was a reoccurring theme with me, and I knew if I could quit drinking, I had a good chance of staying out. But I'm going to start with a joke, okay, because I want to have fun. I don't know about you. All right, so this guy, Bill. Bill, every year Bill goes on these fishing trips with all his buddies. It's like a yearly thing. They have a cabin and they rent it out and everything. And he goes with Bob and Dave. So this year, his wife Lois says, Bill, you know, you're not going to go this year. You're not going to go on the fishing trip with Bob and Dave. You're going to stay home with me this weekend. I've got a weekend planned out and we're going to, you know, be together. And he's like, oh, okay. So he calls Bob and Dave. It's like Wednesday. And he tells me, he says, I can't go on a fishing trip, guys. You know, Lois says that we've got plans, you know. And when she says we got plans, we got plans. And, you know, there's no way I can get it. And they're like, oh, man, but we got the cabin. You know, you got that new rod and reel. We really, you know, we want to go. And the weather's going to be great. And he says, man, I can't do it. I can't do it. So they're like, all right. So come Friday, you know, they call him up. They're like, you sure you can't go? And he's like, man, she's holding to it. You know, I'm going to have to spend the weekend with her. I'm sorry. Don't worry. I'll pay the money, you know, and just split it up three ways. Don't worry about it. And they're like, all right. So he comes home and, you know, she says, yeah, you gotta stay. That's the deal. So anyway, so Bob and Dave head up to the cabin, you know, to do their fishing thing. And lo and behold, they get up there and there's Bill. You know, and he's already out on the dock fishing away and everything. And they're like, what the hell? So they go up to him and they're like, Bob and Dave are like, what happened, man? I thought you said you couldn't do it. He says, man, the funniest thing happened. He says, I got home from work early and, you know, I'm looking for Lois and I'm saying, Lois, where are you? You know, and he hears, well, yeah. So he's like, what? So he goes in the bedroom and there's Lois tied up. He's like, he's telling him this, you know, she's tied up 4-point restraints. And she said, you know, Bill, do whatever you want. So, that's my joke, guys. You know. All right. Good news is, I don't speak long, all right? You know, I've got a half hour here, so I'll make it brief. I'll get sober fast, which means I'm never going to get sober. If you've heard enough speakers, you'll know that. So I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana, and that's why I'm an alcoholic. All right? You know, my mom and my biological father divorced. I had an older brother, and we moved here with my grandparents, and, you know, my mom remarried. And, you know, I had this stepfather pitch hitting as pops. You know, I'm 3 years old, my first big resentment. You know, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know the traditions, the primary purpose is that, you know, that we help the sick and suffering alcoholic. But long before there was alcohol for me, there was something else, you know. And I love this stuff, and it's something I battle with today. I'm working on it one day at a time, and it's the other white powder. It's sugar. And I love sugar, you know. And as a kid, I found it, and, you know, it did things for me. You know, it changed the way I felt, you know. And intuitively, I just levitated towards it, you know. And what it was is, you know, I was a really wiry kid. And my mom would always, like, you know, do nap time, you know. And it's like, you know, when you're 4, 5, 6 years old, you do nap time. Me, I'd get up early and I'd do shots of corn syrup and shot glasses. I would do shots of Hershey's chocolate syrup. And then I'd have some kind of cereal that had a prize in it. And then I would do Freezy Pops. And then I would drink Coca-Cola, snack cakes. I like the coconut ones with the cream filling, you know, zingers they were called. And that was my gig. And then my mom would be like, oh, it's nap time. You know, and so she'd chase me around the house because I had lots of energy already being a kid, plus all the extracurriculum sugar I was taking. And she'd corral me into the room and just close the door. And what I would do was I had a 45 record player, and I'd play my favorite record. And it was Here Comes Santa Claus, Here Comes Santa Claus. And the reason being is because I love Christmas. You know, I love getting gifts. You know what I mean? I loved it. And every year I would get lots of gifts, you know. And it talks about in the big book, you know, with the greedy list, you know. And that was my gig, you know. I always had what I wanted. And I made sure everyone knew what I wanted. And I always got what I wanted, you know. And I just couldn't wait for Christmas to come again. You know, it was like 364 years sucked. And then there was Christmas, you know. And it was great. So it would always reset, you know, and I have to work all the way through. And I never did good in school. You know, kindergarten, they kicked me out. You know, they told my mother not to bring me back, so she put me in a parochial school. And then the nuns said that, you know, maybe you need to find another school. And then I went to an all-boys school, which was, like, privately run. But for some reason, I think the guy was a little physical, and they shut it down. And then the next year, I went to another private school that was co-ed, and I liked that one a lot better. But the same thing, you know, I'm getting in trouble. I mean, I learned how to lie and steal and cheat at a very young age. Finally, what ended up happening is my parents just pulled me out of private schools and put me in public schools because I was getting in so much trouble. And they're spending all this money, you know. And the longer I stay sober, the more I realize how much my mom and my stepfather really, really, really worked with me. You know, got me the best of money could throw at it. You know what I mean? My mom was very successful real estate agent. My stepfather was, you know, born and raised in New Orleans. He had a construction company, so we had lots of money. You know, my wife says we were rich. I thought we were upper middle class, but, you know, I'll go with rich, I guess, because that's what she said. And, you know, so I had tutors, I had shrinks, I had the best schools that money could buy, and it always ended up being the same, which was I was failing, you know, and I get in a lot of trouble in school, so they'd always kind of, you know, have to focus on me. And what I realized today is, like, a lot of people are good academically, a lot of people are, you know, very, very likable, a lot of people are very physical, they're good in sports, and then you got kids like me that are just really bad, you know, and that was my MO, and I was very good at it, you know, like it says in the book, you know, we're overachievers. Well, unfortunately, that's one thing that really is not good to be overachieving at. Was bad because, you know, my story is, you know, I'm sure you probably think I went to college and became a doctor or something of that nature. The reality is it's not true. I ended up just getting worse and worse in the public schools. And I remember in sixth grade, the best thing I ever got out of school, I'll never forget it, was I got best dressed. That's pretty good to me. And you see, that's alcoholism in itself. I'm already making the outside appear to be good. You know, I'm already, you know, comparing my insides to your outside. So, see, you look good. Well, then, in order for me to feel good, I must look good as well. So, you know, I had lots of nice clothes. My mother would buy me anything, you know, like I said, I wanted. And, you know, I ended up, you know, after public school, they put me back in a private school, but then the same thing happened. I just got in trouble. And as you can see, I've not even talked about drinking, you know. So it's going to get going real fast here, real quick. Once I start hitting the alcohol, it's like, you know, you have a match and you throw a gallon of gasoline on it. You know, that's kind of how it's going to go. And what ended up happening, my parents divorced, and also my mom had my little sister at this time, so it's my mom, my little sister, she's running the business, and then she's got me. And I was a lot of work for a gang of people, you know, much less a single mom with a two-year-old trying to run her own business. And we also lived in the French Quarter at this time, which is a very interesting place to live, okay? So, you know, Bourbon Street and all this stuff. And so by the time I was 15, I figured out that school wasn't for me. And the last grade I almost completed was the eighth grade, and I just decided I was going to live on the streets. You know, I made that choice, and no one's going to stop me. And I learned violence gets you what you want. You know, I learned that real quick, too. If you act crazy, you put your hands on stuff, people will leave you to hell alone, you know, unless they're bigger than you or they have a gun, which I learned that real quick, too. So I hit the streets, and, you know, it wasn't a big secret. You know, my mother knew what was going on. My stepfather knew what was going on. And all my friends started to kind of fade away from me that I had grown up with. You know, we went from, you know, bicycles to skateboards, and I had gotten into punk rock music, and that's very conducive to not caring and not needing a place to stay and not needing money, and clothes is of very little importance. So, I mean, I fit right in. It was a shoe-in for me. So I'm living on the streets, you know, and I mean, when you live on the streets and you have no education, you have no skills, there's not a lot you can do. You can lie, steal, cheat, rob, prostitute. I mean, I did it all, you know what I mean, all in the name of getting loaded. You know, and I loved it. I would have kept doing it until I died. But fortunately for me, I did it for about 2 years, and I started getting in trouble. You know, I started getting arrested, and the first time I got arrested was, let me back up. It wasn't the first time. The first time I went to adult jail, let's put it that way. 17, you're an adult in New Orleans, and I found some credit cards, and me and the assistant district attorney, her daughter, we went up there to try to buy some clothes, and I got caught, you know, and I got out on bond for that. My brother bonded me out. And it was Mardi Gras. I ended up shooting fireworks off at its Cadillac because I thought it was real funny. And it just so happened to be the police, the officer that was working off duty, the door at the club we weren't allowed in, his car. And he didn't think it was very funny. So I went to jail for that, and I was already out on bond. And that was like my first experience with like sitting in jail. I was there for 20 days, and it was like 20 years, you know. And I remember I went through withdrawal. You know, people are like, dude, did you ever wake up? You know, and I was sleeping, like, constantly, and I was sweating, you know, because it was, like, Tent City in New Orleans at that time. And I didn't know what was going on. I just thought I was tired, and I sweat a lot. You know, what I realized today is all the alcohol and everything I had been doing was coming out of me. So I did and I had dreadlocks, and I remember they ended up shaving my head because of the lice and stuff. I didn't have lice, but they would do that because there was a lice problem. And so I was like, and then they told me about the wonderful place called Angola. And I was out on bond, so I'm like, yeah, I got these charges. They're felonies. And they're like, oh, man, you're going to have a fun time up in Angola. And I'm like, really? They're like, oh, yeah, young guy like you, you know, they're going to take markers and make makeup for you. And I'm thinking, Jesus, you know, I'm a scared guy. Even today, you know, I'm a mama's boy. I'm a big coward, you know, and you're telling me all this stuff, and I'm freaking out. You know, I'm like, I don't want nothing to do with that. I mean, I'm not tall today, so then I think I was about the same. But I weighed like 40 pounds less, you know, and I'm just this little scrawny street kid, you know, and they're telling me about Angola, which I would never would have went to, but I always go to worst case scenario, you know what I mean? That's where I go, impending doom is my friend. And I'm thinking, man, I'm going to get the hell out of here, and I'm bailing. You know, I'm getting the hell out of New Orleans. So that's what I did. You know, I ended up calling up my brother, and he gave me a bus ticket to go back with my mom, who was now living in Mississippi. And, you know, I never knew about court. Like, you go to court, and you have to appear, and, you know, generally they'll give you a sentence and all this stuff. Because prior to that, when I was a juvenile, my mom and them knew a juvenile judge, so I'd never go to court. I remember my mom waking me up, you got to go to court. I'd be like, I ain't going. So I'd destroy the clock radio, get real violent, and my mom would just close the door and leave me alone. So I thought I was going to do the same thing, you know. I'm just like, whatever. So I go, and I'm up there, and my mom's like, well, you want to move to Florida or Atlanta? You know, the economy sucks here. I'm like, well, Florida sounds like a lot of fun. You know, because we used to go to Pensacola every year for spring break. And I'm like, man, I love the beach. You know, I'm a beach kind of guy. And, you know, I remember spring break was real big. It was 1987. I remember Miami Vice was a big show. And then I remember I saw 48 Hours on Crack Street, and they had that crack in Florida. I'm like, man, I want to go to Florida, you know. And I remembered it. I called my grandparents to tell them the good news that I was going to go, you know, do the geographical cure. And, you know, I call them up, and they're like, you know, you had to go to court. And I'm like, ooh, buzzkill. You know, and they're like, and my brother gets on the phone. He's all pissed off. He's like, you know, I put up the money. They came to my job. They've been coming to our house looking for you, the sheriffs. And I'm like, oh, man. You know, and I'm thinking, oh, boy. And they're like, the best thing you can do is go and don't ever come back. And it sounded like a good deal to me. You know what I mean? I'm like, because I'm thinking Angola. Now I'm really screwed because I didn't show up to court. So I came to Florida, sun and fun, you know, sunny place for shady people. And it always, if you hear enough speakers, you'll hear that theme. We come to Florida because, you know, things are going to be different here. And this is why on COPS, it's always in Florida and California. Same gig. You know, people like me are coming here. You know, right now, I think they're here. And, you know, I was kind of upset, you know, my grandparents and my brother were like that, but at the same time, it was an easy out. You know, I'm not a stand-up guy. You know, I'm not going to man up to anything. I'm a punk. You know, I'm a street punk that'll just, you know, steal from me when you turn around. You know, that's the kind of kid I was, you know. And so I came here, and I went to Plant High School to get my GED, and I got a job at the Colonnade, which shows you kind of people work at Colonnade. And, you know... And, you know, I remember I had to get a job, and they're like, do you have an ID or a driver's license? And I'm thinking, I remember my wallet had nothing in it. You know, I'm like, I don't have any of that. And they're like, you don't have an ID? I'm like, no. You know, I was 17 years old. I had no Social Security card, nothing. So I had to go get all this stuff. And, you know, I went and got my GED, and I remember I got it by 1 point by the grace of God. And, you know, and it just progressively got worse. You know, it never got any better, you know. And, you know, by the time I was 19, I got a DUI, and I'm lying, stealing a lot. You know, a lot of violence, a lot of guns, a lot of, you know, drug dealing. All this stuff is going on. And, you know, by the time I was 19, I got a DUI, and I remember that was like my first inclination that I might have a problem with alcohol. I remember that, and I'm like, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to not drink, you know. And I was on probation for a half pound of weed. And so I'm like, you know, I'm on this misdemeanor probation stuff. So I'm like, I'm not going to drink, and I'm not going to do anything else for the time of the probation. I did it, and that proved to me that I wasn't an alcoholic, you know. And I was like, good, you know. So by the time I was done with everything, I started drinking again, and not even 4 months later, I'm in prison. And I know that probably came as a shock to you guys. I know it wasn't a shock to me. I remember I had started working out. You know, I had these cinder blocks in the garage, and I had to pull through them. And my mom comes up, she's like, what the hell are you doing? I go, I'm working out, you know. And she's like, you know, and I'm like, because I know, you know, when you go to jail and prison, you got to fight, you know. And I'm like, man, I need to get some muscles or something, you know. And, you know, and I, you know, my mother, I put her through hell, you know, to put it bluntly, you know. And that's an understatement. You know what I mean? I mean, I totaled, I don't know, half a dozen of her cars. You know, I'd steal them and go total them and then come home and act like nothing happened. And she'd go, where's my car? And I'd, what? You know, and it's gone, you know. Or the best one was I'd total it and park it there. And she'd go out to go to work, and there's her car totaled, you know. And then the police would show up with a box of parts, you know. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff I would do as a kid. And I'm passed out wondering why she's so upset at me, you know, for destroying her car, you know. And the sad thing was she couldn't file on it because the insurance company, there was only one of two things: file it as a stolen car and then I get charged, or two, eat it. And she'd eat it every time, you know. She'd eat it, she'd pay to get it fixed, you know what I mean. And so I end up going to prison for a whole slew of charges. And you know, I remember, again, I'm like, I have this thought, like, maybe I'm an alcoholic. And I was in confinement with this other guy, and I'm telling him, and he's in there for murder and all this stuff, big drug dealer from St. Pete, and I'm consoling in him. And I said, you know, I think I have an alcohol problem, you know, because of the DUI. I went to AA one time, and he said, damn, dog, you ain't no alcoholic. I was like, he's like, you too young, man. I'm like, thank you. I like you. So ended up going to prison. I fought my cases and got out like a year later because I was a youthful offender and because I had these gun charges and all this stuff, and got a real sweet gig. And I went up the road, did like 6 months. So it's a total of like a year I was locked up. I got out. I turned 21 in jail. And I remember I came home, and it was like, you know, my mom and my little sister weren't all happy to see me. And I had this crappy car that was real low, and it was like a pain in the ass to move. And they had, because the real nice place to live on the beach, they had to move because everybody in the neighborhood knew what was going on, because when the sheriffs, two different police, all this stuff, you know, come with a search warrant on her house. They kind of know what's going on in that house. So she had to move. You know, I had to move my crappy car, which was a pain in the ass to move because it didn't run and it was super low. So she, I come home thinking, you know, everyone's going to be excited to see me. And she's like, you know, you can sleep on the couch, but you got to get out as soon as possible, you know, and get rid of your car. You know, we've been toting it around. And I just remember, you know, I'm thinking like Boys in the Hood, you know, like we're going to have Domino's parties and barbecue. And I'm like, man, this ain't cool at all. You know, so I cried that night. You know, I'm like, poor me, you know, poor, not thinking anything about what I had just put my mother through. You know, I'm the only one in our family anywhere that has come even remotely close, much less gone to prison. You know what I mean? This is my sister, my little sister had to watch this. So next day I called Joe up. And I'm like, hey, Joe, what's up? He's like, hey, you want to go to lunch? I'm like, yeah, dude, celebrate you getting free. I'm like, finally someone realizes, you know, how cool this is. I'm out, you know. And Joe picks me up. We go to Pizza Hut. I'm 21. You know what we do? We get a pitcher of beer. Celebrate. I can drink legal. So I know you'll probably think I've never went back. Well, I went back within months. You know, it's like, you know, that was a shock to me. I remember that because I was like, I'm not going back to prison. And I didn't even do 5 months out. You know, I started selling drugs, stealing cars, doing the same thing I've been doing before, and went right back. But this time, you know, I was in my head. You know, I got in a bunch of trouble. I was pissed off. You know, I was really pissed off at myself that I couldn't even do a year. Because we made fun of people in prison that would get out and come right back. And now I'm that guy. You know, I thought I was smarter than everybody. I didn't think I was like these people that I'm incarcerated with. And I realized on some level that I was, you know. And so end up getting a bunch of trouble in jail. They put me in confinement there. I went to prison, got in first prison I went to. I got in a riot there. They shipped me to another prison. I'm in confinement. And that's when it all sunk in that, you know, this is going to be the rest of my life, you know. And I started going to AA in prison because I think it would get me out sooner because of the trouble I was in. It never did. But the seed was planted because every week two guys would come into that prison and they would bring AA meetings. And I would go every Friday. And I'd help set up chairs. You know, I'm doing service. And I was a sergeant at arms. I still don't know what what that means. But, you know, so I ended up doing like 2.5 years. I got out, and I was working my program, which is I don't drink. I don't do anything. And that worked for a while. And then I started drinking. You know, I was bartending by this time. You know, I got out with $100 and a garbage bag of clothes. I was 24 years old. By the time I was 27, I owned my own house, had a real nice BMW. You know, I was bartending. I was working at this mortgage company. You know, life was good for a convict like me. You know, I got 8th grade education, you know, only in America. Kind of tells you why the mortgage industry is the way it is. But anyway, so what ends up happening is I'm at this country club. I think that, you know, it's been 4.5 years since I drank. I can start drinking again. I start drinking. Normal people don't count how long it's been since the last time they drank. You know, I never got that. So I started drinking again. And the problem is, you know, with the lifestyle I lived, I drive a lot, you know. And I go out every night because I know people. I know lots of people. And we do lots of things every night of the week till all hours. And you know, and so I start getting in trouble driving is what it is. The first one, I was doing 120 and a 45, didn't get a DUI, and then I was doing another one just drunk as hell, and the guy just gave me a ticket for possession. And another time, I ended up in someone's yard, and the person with me got a DUI instead of me because I was already in trouble. And then I ended up hitting a tree, you know, drunk as hell. And luckily, no one got hurt. You know, only I did. I ended up fighting with the cops. I had a plastic surgery in my eye and all this stuff. And, you know, I already had a real good attorney at this time because I learned in prison you get a really good attorney, you know. And his brother is a circuit judge in Pinellas County, so, you know, he's like, first thing when I get out of jail, he's like, look, you got to quit drinking and you got to quit driving. You know, you don't have a license no more. And I remember I want to sue the cops. You know, that's my first thought. You know, I'm like, we want to sue him. He's like, he goes, here, look, Mr. Heath, you got to quit drinking and driving. You know, that's the first thing. We got to deal with these charges. You're in a lot of trouble right now. And I had already been in a lot of trouble. And then with my record, I have a 24-page record. I've been 13 felony convictions. You know, I've got, I don't know how many misdemeanors, you know. I mean, I've got a nice record. I mean, and it'll speak for itself. I don't have to prove it to you. I've been arrested 50-some-odd times, you know, and He's like, you're in a lot of trouble, man. You're in a lot of trouble because the state of Florida has a point system. So it doesn't matter what your charge is now. They take everything that you did prior to that and they add it all up. So as long as it's a felony and then they have habitual courts, you know, they have real special programs for people like me. Makes you feel privileged. So I'm like, but I want to sue, you know? I want something for free. So I didn't quit drinking. A buddy of mine in Tampa, my friend Dave, it's anonymous. There's a million Daves. He had gotten clean and sober, and I had talked to him, and he was out. He went through DACO, I think it was, and we're talking. We've been friends since we were 19, and, you know, I'm like, yeah, yeah. So I'm continuing to drink, and I tried to control drinking, which I failed miserably. You know what I mean? I tried O'Doul's first, and then it was one beer, and then I was like, well, two beers will be good, and then I'm just, like, getting wasted. And this time I had been with this girl, and we were about ready to kill each other, so we had domestic violence. I got arrested. We couldn't stay in the house, so I'm sleeping on mom's couch. 28 years old. Life is grand. I couldn't drive. You know, I got laid off from my job, and so I attempt to get sober. I went to one meeting on a Friday night, and I remember I had to went in with Kells on probation. So I went, and I called Dave up after a meeting. I'm like, yo, man, I went to a Friday night meeting, because that's what we did in prison. We went on Friday nights. I'm thinking the same thing. And I had the book, you know, and I call him up. I'm like, yo, man, I got the big book, and you know, I got the big book, and I got the big book, and, you know. And I remember my mom picked me up and dropped me off, and her boyfriend, and I was all excited, you know, that I had bought this big book, you know. It was like a big deal, I guess, that I spent $5.95 on a big book or something. I still have it to this day. And they weren't very impressed with it, and that really pissed me off, because I'm like, you know, I went to the meeting, I got the big book, what's the problem, you know? So I went back the following Friday, did the same thing, you know, the third Friday I got drunk, you know, and, you know, and that was just spiraled for like 2 months, and ended up happening the last drunk, we had a layoff party at the mortgage company, started drinking about 11 o'clock, continued to drink till about 3 in the morning, and I broke in my mom's house because I got in a fight with a bar where a friend owned, and that was real nice, and in the parking lot, so she locked me out, broke in the house, stole her car, went to Egg Platter at like 4 in the morning to get breakfast, you know, and broke back in and passed out. My mom said, you got to go. Your sister and I are not going to let you sit here and be a drunk on our dime. And this guy I'd worked with when I first got out of prison had gotten sober, and she bumped into him because he worked at that restaurant and bar, and he gave my mom his number and said that he was sober a year in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that if I ever wanted to go, to give him a call. His name was Dan, a lot of Dans. And he said he went every day, and I remember thinking, wow, every day? I'm thinking, geez, we go on Friday, you know, and I just remembered, though, I thought that was a little extreme, but I wasn't going to call him, but I kept the number anyway, because I was sleeping on the couch, and it was like a dresser there, and I had the number in there. That morning, I called him up, you know, I was crying, I was all distraught, and I said, you know, I want to go to a meeting with you. He said, okay, meet me here. It was a Saturday night. Went up there. And, you know, when I woke up, I was desperate, you know. By 9 o'clock, I had a plan. I mean, I had a plan. I'm on the cell phone working my plan, and Dan's looking for me, you know, because I showed up at 7:59, you know, sat right next to the door, and 8:59, I was out of the door on the phone working my game, you know. I got a game plan now, you know. I'm going to stay sober forever. And Dan's like, you know, can I talk to you? I'm like, hold on a second. Busy, you know, we're busy, you know, we're busy people, you know, and I say, hey, let me call you back. So I start talking to Dan, and Dan's like, I'm gonna be your sponsor. And I'm like, for whatever that meant, I didn't know, but I agreed. I'm gonna pick you up tomorrow night. That's like the short version. That's really all I heard, because there was a lot in between, you know. And Dan picked me up, and I started going to meetings every day, you know, and he'd pick me up every night, and I had a severance package for 3 months, and I'd already had a job working at another restaurant bar, and he's like, you need to quit that, you know, you got to stop working at night. And I said, okay, quit the job, took the severance package, didn't work for 3 months, and hung out and went to a lot of meetings in 90 days, and, you know, and it seemed like, you know, I progressively got worse. Like, people are like, oh, it gets better, it's a life, you know, it's, oh, this wonderful thing, and I'm looking around the parking lot at 2250 going, these people are on crack. They ain't a car worth over $3,000 out here. The people got hobo clothes on, and you're telling me this is a life beyond my wildest dreams? I'm thinking they're crazy. They're crazy, you know. And But it was better than going to prison, which is where I was heading. And, you know, ended up meeting this one guy. And they had just, in 1998 was a great year because Monday Night Speaker started and the Pinellas Park Young People started. And I remember I wanted to go there. And Dan's like, no, you don't need to go there. We go to this meeting on Saturday. I was like, all right. So after about 3 months, I was getting angrier and angrier and angrier. I would go to meetings and I'd express the way that I didn't mind putting my hands on people, you know. And I wondered why I wasn't making any friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I would just wait for someone to ask me, how you doing? You know, and that was like a lead in to be like, just dude, what's your problem? You know what I mean? I was more scared of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous than I ever was scared in prison. You know, I did not know how to act. See, I can handle that setting. I can do that setting. This setting here, I had no freaking clue. I was scared to death of you people. You know what I mean? Like I said, I could kick every one of them's ass. It wasn't a big deal, but I was scared to death. It took me a while before I could sit through a whole meeting. I'd have to break, go in the bathroom, put some water on my face, breathe, and come back out and sit down. And no one ever called on me. No one ever said nothing to me. You know what I mean? That's how scared I was of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and finally, I met this guy, and he was like me. I used to watch him drive all crazy, and his car was dented up, and I'm like, yeah. And finally, he had a punk rock shirt on, and he said, I just asked him, I built up the courage, and I said, you know anything about that band? He's like, well, I'm wearing the shirt, aren't I? You know? And he's from New Jersey, you know? And I'm like, you know, so we hit it off immediately. And Dan's like, maybe you ought to go with him. And I was like, yeah, they started this young people's group. He's like, go with him. You know, he's involved and he does stuff. You know, Dan was getting tired of me is what it was, you know, because I was just wearing him out. And so I started going to that young people's group. There was like 8, 9, 10 people there. You know what I mean? And I'd go there, and I was like, man, this is awesome. You know, there's young people here. And I met my sponsor out now, Lou. Lou was a DCM, so he came and checked out this new group. And I was just thinking, the other night I was at a meeting, and those people that started that group, it was Jean, Little Lisa, Melissa, Roman, Lucy, and there was another. They're all sober. They're all still sober. Those people that started that group, we've all, you know, got multiple years of time, you know. And the group ended up disbanding. That's coincidentally how this group started. Jaime moved down here, and he came to our young people's group because he worked for Nordstrom. And he ended up joining our group, and then he started this group. And first year, the first meeting I was here, I was on crutches because 3 years sober, I flipped my motorcycle and ended up crushing my ankle. But, you know, so it's pretty cool. Like now, at that time in Florida, there was only two young people's group that we knew of because we checked the register. And ended up going to International Convention in 2000. When I was 2 years sober, ended up meeting my wife. That was like the best thing that ever happened to me. Cliff the other day, and if you don't know Cliff, you got to come to Monday Night Speakers. Cliff is this irony old guy from Pinellas Park. I don't think he's changed at all. And the other day he comes up to me and he goes, man, that's the best thing that ever happened. You're talking about my wife. You know what I mean? And I'm like, you're right. You know, and Cliff is a good. Cliff is the guy who brought me a pamphlet at a meeting about profanity. You know, and I'm thinking, this dude got a lot of balls coming up to me, you know what I mean? And he's like, here, you might want to read this. It helped me. And I started reading because I cursed so much that the only meetings I could speak at were the newcomer meetings. That's it. No, I never spoke anywhere else but the newcomers because you were guaranteed to speak there. And whenever I did speak there, all I could do was F this, F that, F this. And so Cliff gave me that, and that helped me out a lot. But, you know, I got my year. And, you know, at 6 months, I wrecked a motorcycle. I thought it'd be a good idea. I asked my sponsor, he said I'd get a moped because I got my license back. And I went and got this bike, and it was way past the moped. I bought it, drove it home, went to my young people's group. If I could have, I would have rode it right up here like Orange County Choppers, you know. And and everyone at the meeting is going, that's yours? And I said, of course it is, you know. And they're like, you are crazy. You are absolutely crazy. He's like, you know how to ride that? I'm like, of course I did. Man, I stole a few every now and then. But ended up wrecking it after the meeting. I hit a guardrail doing like 120. And, you know, I was all screwed up, you know. But luckily it wasn't that bad. So ended up meeting my wife. I went to go get parts at Honda. And I see this girl there. I'm like, wow, man, she's really pretty. So I go and get my parts. I come back. I'm like, man, I really need a reason to go back there. So I went back there again, and I see her again. So I tell her, I said, you know, you're very beautiful, you know, and I left. So she got the number and calls me, you know, and I'm like, whoa, hello, you know, and we proceeded to start dating. And she's not an alcoholic, you know, but she has found out she – why she likes me. Her dad's an active alcoholic. She's just celebrated 9 years in Al-Anon, and that in itself is, right? So we started on this whirlwind thing of dating, and we ended up getting married on my five-year anniversary because I never wanted to forget. And they said at 5 years, you get your marbles back. So I wanted to make sure that I knew what I was doing. We dated for 3 years. We got married, and my best men were my sponsor and a guy I've been sponsoring for 9 years. You know, he's still sober, and that was my side of the family. She has a real big family, and they had, you know, my sister was one of the brides. It was a beautiful, beautiful wedding. And then I decided I wanted to change careers. I wanted to become a mechanic. She's like, why don't you work on cars? I'm like, I can't work on cars. She's like, you could have fooled me. So I got a job working at a shop, worked there for like almost 2 years, ended up opening up our own business, which became highly successful, so successful, almost got drunk. And, realized that my relationship with my wife was in the tank. My sobriety was still good. I mean, I'm still active, still doing lots of service. On the surface, it looks great. And, realized that it was going to be one of two things was going to happen. Either I was going to go on to the bitter end with that business, or I quit while I'm ahead. You know, A's taught me to get in and get out. You know what I mean? I always love Ice-T said that. Get in and get out. You know, and that's what I did. I got in. I made lots of money, became highly successful, and had tons of job opportunities. I never filled out one application, you know, and did that and walked away. We ended up going to marriage counseling. You know, I'm a big advocate of outside help. Believe me, you know, A helps me a lot, but I got a lot more than just alcoholism going on. Trust me here. You know, so I went to the therapist for like 2 years, so we went to marriage counseling, and, my life this last 2.5 years has taken on a whole new meaning, and I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to international here in a month together, and I'm so excited about that. We're going to go through my hometown, New Orleans, and then we're going to go to Icky Paw in New York. She's actually from New York. I'm from New Orleans, so we're going to go up there in August, and my job, I'm so happy with my job, and like all the guys that come out and support me. I mean, that to me, I go to JDC once a month, and that like is my one commitment. I didn't quit. Like, I'm the treatment chair for our district and all that stuff. But as far as like commitments, I'm the GSR for my group too. I don't like to talk too much about service work, but I go to JDC. Warren hooked me up with this gig. And like, when I got my job, I told him, I said, one Monday a month, I'm going to come in at noon, because you got to be there for almost 4 hours, and I love it, man. These kids, you come in there and we talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, and we went this Monday, and the guy I'm sponsoring, I've got getting him acclimated to going in there. And I mean, it's so cool seeing these kids, and they love us and we love them, and it's starting to get like the residuals. We go in there, and we first go in there, we're like, who knows about Alcoholics Anonymous? No one raised their hand. We had two classes where everyone raised their hand. They all know about Alcoholics Anonymous now. And I even saw one kid on the street, He recognized me from there, which was kind of sketchy in itself, but because he didn't realize where he recognized me from, and then he figured it out. It was from Alcoholics Anonymous. He's like, you with that ANA stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's right. And he's like, all right, man, I'll talk to you later. So that to me is like the cool thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, being able to freely give what was freely given away. You know what I mean? Now, I'll end with this real quick story, because I'm going to go over. It's really hard to tell my story in a short period of time, because I love hearing my voice and I love talking about me. It's my favorite subject. You just ask my wife. So there's this guy, and he's like a naturalist, and he's going up on this mountain doing this walking, like, thing you do, whatever, hiking, you call it. And he comes up on this guy's farm, and this guy's got all these chickens, and some of this is for you, Brian. And there's all these chickens, and then there's a eagle, like this beautiful bald eagle acting like a chicken. Yeah, right? And it's pecking, and it's walking around. And the guy's like, oh, my God. He tells the farmer, he says, you got a bald eagle over there, and it's with your chickens. And the farmer's like, that chicken, as a matter of fact, he sucks as a chicken. He doesn't lay eggs and do anything. And the guy's like, well, you should let him go. He goes, he won't leave. He stays. So the guy's like, tells the farmer, here, I'll take him. So he takes the bald eagle, and he goes on the edge of the mountain, and he takes the bald eagle, and he says, you're a bald eagle, fly, soar, you like to hunt and all this stuff. And the thing just comes straight down, and he starts pecking and walking around again. He's like, dude, you're not getting it. So he takes him again, and he tells him, you're a bald eagle, you're graceful, you're this beautiful thing, and throws him up, and he kind of starts to get it, and he comes back down. And one more time, the guy's like, look, I'm not giving up on you. You're a bald eagle, and you're graceful. You're beautiful. Fly. So he throws him up, and all of a sudden, he starts soaring, and he takes off. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. I am free from the bondage of alcohol. Thank you.